Okay, so we'd like to thank Karen and Jacob Lawrence for sponsoring this morning's locks. And learn Le'ilu Nishmas, Jake's brother, parents, Leah, Ben Abba, and Leah, Bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yeshua, Ben Shimon, Dov. The Neshama should have an Aliyah. And we move on to the next Mishnah in Perkei Avos. This is a Mishnah that is said by the same person who recited the previous Mishnah. That person was the name of Hillel. Which Hillel that is a debate amongst the commentators. For now, we'll just call him Hillel. So, in the Mishnah, we'll just jump straight in. We have a set of more advice. Last week we had 5 different ideas from Hillel. Now we have another 6. Maybe we could break it down or categorize it into 3 or 4. But it seems to be 6 different statements of this Hillel. And let's see what he says. Hu haya omer. He used to say, Ein bor yirei chet. An uncultured person. And again, that's the English translation here from the halacha.org or .com. So that's, I think, the original Sansino translation. Uncultured person. Remember, whenever you read a translation, the translation itself is a commentary because you have to choose how you're going to translate the word bore. So if you would have to translate the word bore and you didn't know what it meant, maybe you would say uncultured. Maybe you say something else.
Like the English word.
Right. Maybe. So we're going to see different commentators who are going to take slightly different approaches on this. Not too much difference. But an uncultured person is not sin-fearing. Ein bor yirei chet. So if you don't have this culture, whatever that means, then you can't fear sin. We'll have to understand what that is talking about. Then number 2, he says, Velo am ha'aretz chasid. And an ama aretz, which is translated here as an ignorant person, cannot be pious. Why is that? We'll see. Number 3, Velo ha'baishan lamad. So an embarrassed person, a shy person, cannot learn, cannot be a good student. Velo ha'kaptan milamed. And an impatient or angry person cannot be a good teacher. Okay? That, you know, for all the teachers here, we may or may not know that. Number 5, velo chol hamarbe b'schora machkim. Not everybody who increases lots of business matters will become wise. So is that wise in Torah? Is that wise in other things? Again, these are all questions we'll see the commentators deal with. And then finally, v'makom shein anoshim hishtadol lios ish, in a place where there are no people, no men, no people who are stepping up to the plate, you should step up to the plate and take in that role. Again, we'll see a number of commentaries that deal with this. Okay, so this is just the background we're going to delve in and analyze a little bit. Let's start with part 1 here in the sources, where we're going to focus on the first 2 clauses, because they seem to be related to each other. Ein bor yirei chet, velo am aretz chasid, is something about people who are lacking something. We're going to categorize them, or actually going to call them some sort of name. You're either a bor or you're an am aretz, and if you're one of those two things, you will not be able to accomplish something, whether that is feared sin or becoming pious. So what's going on here? Part 1, intelligence and piety. The Rambam says in source number 1, the Rambam says, Bor, who, so this is again, if you had to translate this into a word, who asher ein lo, lo chachma velo midos. So what's a bor? A bor, according to the Rambam, is somebody who doesn't have wisdom, nor does he have character. So remember, in Perkei Avos, these are themes that have been recurring. We talk about intelligence and we talk about character. A bor is somebody who lacks both. I don't know if you want to think in your head about somebody who you might know that is like that. Don't say it out loud. But somebody who lacks intelligence and lacks character. That's how the Rambam understands it. We'll see if all the Mefarshim understand it that way. So that bor cannot fear sin. Now, is that a description that bor does not fear sin? Or is that he cannot fear sin? Meaning, is there a deficiency that he's unable to do so? Or is it just describing that he doesn't? Not sure. The Rambam does not elaborate to us. All the Rambam does here is tell us what bor means. He does not elaborate why a bor cannot be a yirei chet. Now, what's an am ha'aretz? Rambam says, ein lo ma'ala sichlis, so he's not intelligent, v'yesh lo ktsas ma'alos midos, but he has some level of character. He's a decent person, but he's not so smart. He's not so intelligent. So that person who is decent but not so intelligent cannot be pious. Now, maybe you would argue that, why not? Why can't, well, first of all, we have to know what piety means. What does it mean to be pious? But why can't somebody who is a decent person be pious even though he's not intelligent, you infer right away that in order to be pious, at least according to the Rambam's understanding, you need some level of intelligence. So it's not just like, I'm a good person, but I'm not smart, that's okay, I could be pious. No, in order to be pious, it doesn't mean you're not a good person, but it means in order to be pious, you need some level of thinking, some level of intelligence involved with that. It doesn't really define, no. The only things he defines here are Bor and Am Haaretz. Everything else is left to the imagination. So it doesn't define to us what chassid is even here. Other places maybe he does. And he doesn't even define for us what Yirei Chet is. We're left to assume that Yirei Chet means fear of sin and chassid means pious. According to the Rambam, usually chassid means to go to one of the extremes. Right, a chassid is, according to the Rambam, as we've done this a number of times, so you have the two extremes and the middle path of whatever character trait you're talking about. So the middle path, the Shvil Zahav, is what we should all be going for. A chassid is somebody who goes to the extreme on the good side. The extreme on the good side, according to the Rambam, isn't always good. You don't want to be a chassid all the time, which is a little bit of a tension, because sometimes we say that a chassid is a good thing. So we're not going to get into that now. But all the Rambam tells us now is a Bor and an Am Haaretz and what the definition of those are. So let's keep going in Mefarshim, and hopefully by the end we'll have some sort of picture of what's going on here. So Rashi gives us a little bit more than the Rambam. He says, Bor is reik mikol davar, kemo sedei bor. So the Rashi tells us, I guess it's similar to the Rambam. Remember, the Rambam said that a Bor is somebody who has no chachma and no midos. Rashi says a Bor is somebody who's completely empty. Empty of what?
Where's
an empty pit, right? So he's empty completely. No, presumably you can say like no character, no wisdom. And he says, you skip the brackets for a moment. Vigarua hu me'am ha'aretz. So now there's a hierarchy. Right? We have two things. We have a boor and we have an am ha'aretz. What's better? What's worse? So the Rashi tells us that the boor is worse than the am ha'aretz, and that fits with the Rambam because the Rambam said that at least the am ha'aretz has character, even though he doesn't have so much intelligence. Because he can't even function in the world. Right? This boor doesn't have intelligence or character, and he can't make money, he can't do anything. He's basically, it's almost like a nebuch. He doesn't know what to do. I don't know, would you say he's a bad person? I don't like putting character, traits on maybe he's ignorant, but it's a little bit more than ignorant because he also doesn't have, at least according to the Rambam, doesn't have character. So there's something problematic with this person, and it's almost like he can't even function. It's not like he's smart and can and be good at business. He can't even be good at business. He can't do anything. So that's Rashi's boor. So that boor can't be Yirei Chet. He can't fear sin. And then he continues for us, Lo Am Haaretz v'chulu, aval Yirei Chet. The Am Haaretz could be Yirei Chet. So the boor can't be Yirei Chet. The Am Haaretz can't be a chassid, but at least the Am Haaretz could be a Yirei Chet. He could fear sin. Efshar dehavi mitoch shu misasek b'schora. So Rashi understands that the Am Haaretz is functioning in the world. That's what Am Haaretz means. He's functioning in the world, meaning he can be part of it. He can have a business. He can work. He's functional to society to some extent, but he can't be pious. Why can't he be pious? So what is he lacking, according to Rashi? He has the ability to function in the world, but what is he lacking? So Rashi doesn't tell us explicitly. It's either, why is it knowledge? Does he say, Am Haaretz, lo Am Haaretz chassid? But again, remember, it's a little bit confusing, but let's try to be careful, because Rashi doesn't tell us what the lacking of the Am Haaretz is. Rambam told us the Am Haaretz has good character but isn't so smart. Rashi doesn't tell us that. All he says is that the Am Haaretz is better than the boor because the boor can't even function in society, can't hold a job down. The Am Haaretz can hold a job. So what doesn't the Am Haaretz have? According to Rashi, it's not clear. He can't be Yirei Chet, correct.
He says what boor is, and oil de amasa umatan.
Correct.
So you have interpreted what he means by the next level, which would be. The next one will be.
He's Yodea,
Masa.
So what doesn't he have? We don't know what he doesn't have. Barbara's right that we know the one thing we know he doesn't have is chassidut, right? He doesn't have this level of piety.
Right. So what exactly?
Is the piety is probably some level of character, right? So he can function. He's a businessman. He can function, but he can't. go that step above and beyond in terms of that piety.
Okay, what that's the definition of piety.
Rashi doesn't tell us. Remember, right, so the question is, does Am Haaretz mean ignorant? Even though he translates, this is where you have to be careful, because in the translation, he translates as ignorant, which is following probably a Rambam interpretation of Ein Lomala Sichlis. According to Rashi, he doesn't say he's not intelligent. Am Haaretz, according to Rashi, means that he's the way of the world. He knows how to function in society, so he might be intelligent. But he's not able to maybe have that character, go that step beyond, be a really, really great character type of person. So that's a good example, actually. Thank you for pointing out that the translation is actually biased here according to the Rambam. According to Rashi, I don't know if I would translate Am Haaretz as ignorant. I might translate Am Haaretz as a person who is knowledgeable about worldly affairs, can't be pious. Now, is that can't be or isn't? I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, so there are contexts in the Talmud where Am Haaretz means different things. So sometimes Am Haaretz means somebody who we don't trust that they have separated Trumos and Maestros. We're not sure if they did. But what does that even mean that they're an Am Haaretz? So Am Haaretz means that they're just sort of like the masses of people. Is it necessarily a bad thing? And the question is, Barry, your point is well taken. The question is whether or not it means the same thing over here. Just like when we had Derech, it's one of these phrases that are so ambiguous, like Derech Eretz, that we saw the whole discussion. Does Derech Eretz mean business? Does it mean character? Sort of a similar discussion over here. Is Am Haaretz a character flaw, or is it just you're just a normal masses type of person who doesn't go above and beyond necessarily? Okay, so let's hold off for a second on analyzing that until we see one more source. Fine. Look at Rabbeinu Yonah, source number 3. And if you expect to come out of this with clarity, I feel bad for you. So let's look at number 3. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Hu haya omer, ein bor yirei chet velo am aretz chasid, habor hu reik, ein bo lo Torah velo mitzvos velo derech eretz b'midos tovos. So just like Rambam and Rashi in the sense that bor means you're completely empty, here he adds the concept you have no mitzvos. It's not just chachma and midos like the Rambam. And Rashi just gave us this blanket statement that he has nothing. Here he's telling us, what doesn't he have? He doesn't have Torah, he doesn't have mitzvos, derech eretz, or midos tovos. Literally nothing. V'targum lo sasim lo sibor lo hutzrach lo bor chasin sha'af yirei chet einanu. So he's not a yirei chet. Kimitoch harekus shebo, in the end of the second line, because of this emptiness that's inside of him, gam min ha'averos lo yada lehishamer. So what's the connection between being a boor, being empty, and not being a yirei chet? The answer is that if I'm empty, if I can't think, and if I don't have character, I don't have ability to fear sin. Because fearing sin takes some level of thinking, takes some level of emotional maturities, takes some level of knowledge and acknowledgement of God. And apparently this boor just doesn't have the capacity to process all of that. Aval Am Haaretz, so that's the boor. So now the second level is the Am Haaretz. Aval Am Haaretz, third line in source 3. Aval Am Haaretz me'urav im abrios b'midos chashuvos. So now this is like the Rambam, that the Am Haaretz can function. He has the social skills to function in society. He has midos, and he has mixas deos yisharos. He can think. He's some level of intelligence. Yodei lishomer v'yishmor nafsho min apshaim. So he has the yirei chet. So an Am Haaretz can fear sin. He can avoid sin. So what doesn't he have? One more thing that he could have. V'yuchal lios tzadik. So he can be a righteous person, this Am Haaretz. An Am Haaretz can be a righteous person. But what does he need? What does he need because he's lacking something? He needs knowledge, and if you tell him what to do, he'll do it. So what does he lack? What is this chassidut, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, that he lacks? The ability to sort of go above and beyond that. Right, so look at the next phrase. Ah, El malos hachasidus lo yochel lahasig ki im gadol b'torah. You cannot. This person, this ama aretz, who has some knowledge and he knows some stuff and he can function in the world, can't be a chasid. He can't be pious because only somebody who is fully holding a gadol b'torah can be pious. Why? Shehi midah shetzricha taharas halev v'zakut hanefesh. It has to have some purity. In order to be a chassid, you have to have a purity of heart. You have to have a clarity of soul. The ein ze biyado chachma lahatoso min hakav ha'emsai ala katzeh ha'acharon. This amaretz doesn't have that added level of intelligence. He's average, if you will. And he can't go to the extreme of the pious. Ala katzeh ha'acharon she'aseh lefnim mishras ha'din and go above and beyond. This is basically, we're describing the average person. That's according to Rabbeinu Yonah. The Am Haaretz is an average person. What's the average person? The average person is a good person. And they follow the rules. And they have fear of sin. And they study and they learn Torah. Most people. But most people can't be exceptional. That's definitional, right? Right? We all. There's something in psychology called the above average effect, that everybody thinks they're above average, right? But not everybody can be above average. We have to have some people at least who are average, right? So this is the average person. The average person is a good person. They have character. They have intelligence. They can follow mitzvos. They can follow the laws, but they can't go above and beyond because in order to go above and beyond, you need that added level of capability, which not everybody possesses. That's how I think Rabbeinu Yonah is understanding it. The Am Haaretz is great. That's the masses. The masses can't be the top 1%. Just doesn't work that way. Okay, one and then two. Yeah.
The question is, knowing Hebrew, I always thought that a bore, when they spoke about somebody like that, it was somebody who was unlearned.
Mm-hmm.
Not having anything to do with his intelligence level, but I thought he was unlearned. But from what I'm seeing here, I think they're talking about somebody who's literally limited in his capacity to learn. And then when I come to that, I'm not sure why the Mishnah even addresses that, because somebody who's so limited and doesn't have the capacity to learn, we understand that somebody like that cannot be unchet.
Okay, so I think you're bringing up an excellent point, is that when we say boor, meaning are we just insulting people who have no capability of doing such a thing? So I would say I hope not. And if that's the case, then either one of two things. So either when it says boor, it doesn't mean somebody who doesn't have the capability, but somebody who chooses not to, meaning has the capability but chooses not to excel. And at that point, we could make a moral judgment of that person. Maybe not me or you, but somebody else can make a moral judgment of that person of you know, they haven't dealt, they haven't lived up to their capabilities. So that's one possibility. That boor does mean capable but hasn't fulfilled their potential. The other possibility is maybe it does mean somebody who doesn't have the capacity, and then it's not, maybe we have to reframe our reading, that it's not a derogatory statement, but rather it's just a statement of fact. Somebody who's a boor who doesn't have the capability can't be a yurechet. So it's a simple-minded person who doesn't have that intelligence can't fear sin. Whatever that means, they're in danger. Maybe you want to put it this way, so we can reframe this whole thing. Is that let's say I'm guiding somebody of that nature, somebody who doesn't have the capability, and I'm in charge of them, and I'm watching over them, and I need the awareness that that person doesn't have the, not just that they're not intelligent, they're in danger of sinning. Because in order to not sin, you need the intelligence to avoid sin. I mean, think about all the times we've said over the past year that the knowledge of sin, right, to avoid sin requires an intelligence. You have to think about it. It requires forethought. And this person doesn't have the capability, let's go with that route. And because they don't have the capability, we're not condemning them. We're not making fun of them. What we're saying is be aware of that so you can help them avoid the sin. So that could be a way of reading it. And then according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the second statement, Elo Am Haaretz Chassid, is not a derogatory statement at all. It's just saying a statement of the masses are capable of being masses. We're average people. We're not all going to be above average people. And why does he have to say that? Maybe to counterbalance the fact that we all think we're so great, right? And maybe we're not so great. Maybe we're just average. Yeah.
Sin. If that's being the case, how can they be held accountable for sinning? Because they're incapable of it.
So if we're going to go the incapable route, how are they held accountable? That's a good question. He doesn't say here they're held accountable. Right? Okay, so you're asking a question that's nothing to do with this Mishnah. I'm not saying it's a bad question. I'm saying this Mishnah is not telling you that it's held accountable. You're saying is that if somebody doesn't have the capability, how does God judge them? Right? So the answer is, I don't know how God does anything, but we've dealt with this question specifically of somebody who, you know, does God judge based on, strict, grade level, or is it based on capability and then, it's more subjective? We've dealt with that specifically, so that would be that same question. Barbara and Chaim, and then we're going to move on. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I don't know what the etymology. It's possible that they're... No, okay. Joyce already looked it up.
It
doesn't mean the same thing. Okay, we'll have... you have to do research into it. Yeah, hi.
There's so many unexplained terms. Can we have a clearer explanation of what exactly does that mean? Is a kuta nefesh? Tarasaleh means what? Does it mean somebody who is born with a purity like an infant, like a child? But does it mean somebody who has worked on himself or herself to remove the impurities that doing an Avera would enable a person to do an Avera easily?
I would say the latter. Tarasaleh means somebody who's worked on it and has built that purity of soul. But it's a good question. Okay. Source number four is one... I think a drash read on this. This is not what the pshat is. I think on a pshat level, we sort of saw all the different possibilities, and the big picture is, let's just review it for a second. No matter who you go with, if somebody asks you, what does this Mishnah mean? I would say, Ein bor yirei chet means somebody who is lacking character and intelligence can't fear sin. It's pretty, again, straightforward, even though it could get more complicated. And Lo'am Arts Chassid means, let's just go with the Rabbeinu Yonah's understanding for a second, is that most people in the world are average and they can't go above and beyond. In order to go above and beyond, you have to be above and beyond. Now, the Sfas Emes has a totally different read of this in one of the explanations here. I quoted to you from the Art Scroll Sfas Emes on Pirkei Avos here. I'll read it in the Hebrew, but you have the English translation on the bottom. Iker kavanaso lahaz. I'm not sure if this is a Sfas Emes or it's in the Sfas Emes Art Scroll book. But when I looked in the Hebrew Sfas Emes on Pirkei Avos, it wasn't there. So it could be that this is a compilation of other Hasidic rabbis as well. I'm not sure. So Iker kavanaso lahazhir bezeh al anashim haomrim ki hamakom gorem hem liot chasid. Masha'in kein kan. Right? So what makes somebody pious? Right? What's the contribution to a pious person? So we all, this is something that comes up in therapy all the time. This is a key point, is that many, many people, I think the status quo is that we blame, I don't know is the right word, but we attribute our success or failures on our environment, on other people, right? And, you make me so angry. You have made me not be able to succeed. It is my family, it is my environment, it's the school, it's my class, it's my teacher, it's all of these other things that have failed me and haven't had given me the ability to succeed. So that, right? So that's the right. So it starts out. You blame other people. Ki hamakom gorim him. It's the environment that causes me to be not a chassid. Right? So if I was pious, why was I pious? Because the environment. If I'm not pious, why am I... Actually, most people say if I'm pious, it's because I did it. Right? But if I'm not pious, it's everybody else's fault. Right? Ki ha-makom gorem heim liot chasid ma she'en ken kan she'zeh vaday asher ikar talui b'lev v'im'ein libo notel lekach lo yo'il ha-makom. It's all about me, the Sfas Emes here says. It's about what I do. It's about my own personal internal self and not the external environment. V'zeh lo am ha'aretz. Ratzel lomar, sheholech bebechinat artziot bilvad, lo yuchal liot chasid. So somebody who is in am ha'aretz means that, the way he defines it is that I'm somebody who blames the aretz. I blame the environment. I blame the context. If you're always going to blame the context, you're never going to be pious. If you want to be pious, what do you need in a word? Personal responsibility is to take it upon myself. It's all up to me to be able to make the decisions and be a better person. In the English, I think they phrase it well. It is tempting to fault one's eretz, the environment, for one's lack of piety. Such an individual who blames external factors rather than his own lack of internal self-development will never become a chassid. So I think it's a very important point and takeaway that we all need to take the responsibility on our own to be able to grow and develop. Yeah, Michelle. That's the marshmallow.
That's not the marshmallow.
The Twinkie. Let's get our candy. Let's get our candy right. So what's the Twinkie?
The Twinkie effect was a court case of a young person.
All right.
Who blamed his crimes on the fact that he
ate too many Twinkies
when he was growing up. He was fed a lot of Twinkies.
Right.
And the sugar and the chemicals in the Twinkies. I'm not quoting the phrase. It's out
right.
there, just like the marshmallow.
Did he get it up?
Did he win?
Can't answer that question.
Okay.
I'm waiting for Twinkies to get the
hashgacha. Okay, one more and then we're going to move on. Yeah?
Yeah, we still didn't define what it means to be a chassid.
Right, so,
chassid here?
So there's different ways of defining it. I would say chassid here, what does pious mean? So according to the Rambam, we sort of slightly defined it. According to the Rambam, being pious means to go to one extreme. Right, to the extreme that's good.
But he doesn't like it anyway.
He doesn't like it. Correct. So there's a chassid. So in some elements he likes it. In anger and humility he likes the chassid. But a chassid is somebody who goes... So the Rabbeinu Yonah defined it, if you were paying attention carefully. I didn't elaborate on it, but it says, it's lifnim mishurat hadin. And that's how he applied it beforehand also whenever we had the concept of chassid. It means to go above and beyond the letter of the law. Right, so that's the contrast to somebody who's a... So an Am HaAretz does what he's told, right? He has the ability to say, tell me what the law is, I'll follow that law. That's the Am HaAretz. The Chassid, because he has this clarity of soul and has maybe a little bit more intelligence or whatever it is, can now go above and beyond and say, I'm going to go to the extreme and not just go by the letter of the law, but go beyond the letter of the law. Lifnim mishurat hadin. So that's one explanation. You could have more explanations, but I think that's it's enough to get an understanding of what's going on here. Okay, so that's part one, understanding Ein Bor Yirei Chet Velo Am HaAretz Chassid. Now part two is going to link, number three and four together. Lo HaBaishan Lamad Velo HaKabdan Milamed. So a baishan, a translated here, shame-faced person, cannot learn, well at least, and an impatient person or an angry person cannot teach. So let's look at the Rambam. The Rambam's very quick here. Source number five, baishan, rov haboshes, too much embarrassment, too much timidity. There's too much. Now we're going to talk about that in a moment in terms of this balance, because we have it's the Rambam, we have extremes, so we need to know the extremes, we need to know the middle level. So what's the balance that we should strike here when it comes to learning and being embarrassed? So we'll get there. But what's the kabdan? Is the ka'asan, somebody who's angry, gets angry. So somebody who's angry can't be a teacher. And we'll elaborate on all this as the sources go on. Source number six is Rashi, lo abayshan lamad, lefi shene'emar, so he quotes a pasuk here and a gemara, im navata bisnasev im zamos yad lapeh, zeh pasuk perish chazal b'mesechas brachos, im menavel atzmo b'divrei Torah, if you embarrass yourself, if you put yourself on the line when it comes to learning Torah, sofo lisnase, then you're going to be raised up. You're going to raise up. So meaning if I'm scared, maybe people are going to judge me, maybe people are going to question me, and I'm a little bit anxious, so I keep my mouth shut. So then you're not going to learn. But if I put myself on the line and I risk getting embarrassed, so I ask the question, I raise my hand, then I will end up learning more. I don't ask questions. I'm afraid how people are going to judge me if I ask this question. They're going to judge my intelligence. They're going to judge my character. So therefore, I'm not going to answer. I'm not going to ask. It's like I'm putting my hand on my mouth, as the pasuk says. You're not going to be able to say anything. You're not going to be able to learn anything. You're not going to know anything. So there's an element, this: if you don't ask questions, if you're too embarrassed to ask questions, you're not going to be able to learn well. That's how Rashi understands lo habayshan lamed, velo hakabdan melamed, zehu rav, so this is talking about a teacher, shu katsar lev, he's short of heart, meaning he's impatient, v'ko'es, and he gets angry, imishal atamid pa'mim harbe, students asking over and over and over, b'inyan echad, on one thing, uvitargum, and he quotes the targum, we're not going to get into that now, but basically, the point here is that somebody who's a teacher doesn't have the patience to answer a child who keeps asking. Now, I think there's at least...
Balance.
There's at least a bunch of teachers here, so I'm not gonna who have many, many, many more years of experience than I do or ever will. But the point here is that notice how what's Rashi's example. So Rashi's example is a student who's asking a lot of questions. Notice what Rashi's example isn't. A student who's trying to annoy the teacher by making funny noises and getting everybody to, not pay attention. So I don't know if that's a distinction to be made, but Rashi's saying is that if you're a teacher and the student wants to learn and keeps asking and just he's maybe a little bit slower than you or slower than the other kids, and you get angry at that student, then that's for sure a problem. Right? I don't know what Rashi would say about getting angry or frustrated at a student who's going out of his way to make trouble. He doesn't address that. So I'm just, for all of the students... Everybody sat nicely, yeah.
Yeah, because the rabbi had a rule.
You can't...
Exactly right.
So I don't know, I don't know. So look at source number 7, Rabbeinu Yonah. I titled it, just flipped the page, source number 7. Lo abayshan lamed. Midas haboshes hi tova b'chol inyan. So now we're going to be nuanced. We have to look at the context. Let's look at not just in this part of when being boshes is a problem. Rabbeinu Yonah says usually boshes, have an element of shame, is good for you. Rabbeinu Yonah says midas haboshes hi tova b'chol inyan levad b'limud. So being shy, being timid is good everywhere else. That might be too blanket of a statement, but everywhere else it's good, except when it comes to learning. Kinyan Shenemar v'dabre be'edosecha neged melachim v'lo evo. So David says that I'm going to speak your teachings in front of kings, and I'm not going to be embarrassed. Shedavin alei shalom bevarchem mipnei shal v'amdu lifnei malchei umos me'olam lohem is bayish miladaber b'tov v'mitzvos. So David, whoever he was speaking before, he was never embarrassed to give a dvar Torah, to do mitzvos. Gam ki yisalu bo umaligim b'dvaro, even though they might make fun of him and they might embarrass him. Ki lo tova habusha b'limud. So now notice how this is a little bit different. The way Rashi was saying it is, what's the problem with boshas? According to Rashi, if I'm embarrassed, what can't I do? I can't ask questions and learn. Rabbeinu Yonah is not saying, at least at this point, the same exact thing. What is Rabbeinu Yonah saying? Why is boshas a problem? Is it an element of not asking the right questions? Where's the embarrassment? It's actually in teaching, which is a little bit interesting. Right. So, but David HaMelech, apparently, meaning if I'm going to give a Dvar Torah somewhere, there's I'm at a meal, and everybody's talking about something else, and everybody's talking whatever they're talking about. And I think to myself, it would be a nice idea to say a Dvar Torah right now. But what are they going to think about me? What are they going to say about me? So it's not that I'm learning, like Rashi said, but I'm actually teaching. But I'm afraid to teach, I'm afraid to discuss, because people are going to judge me negatively. And the lesson from David HaMelech here and from the Mishnah in Perkei Avos is, no,
go for it.
And not that they're not going to embarrass you. They might embarrass you, but you still go for it. And you still say the Dvar Torah. Ki lo tova habusha b'limud. Because the way Rabbeinu Yonah is saying it, it's not learning. It's not that I'm a learner, I'm a student, that's the problem. That's how Rashi understood it. It's a student problem. Rabbeinu Yonah is saying it's a limud problem, which is more than just learning. It's the context of learning. Not a student, but learning. That's the difference. It's not a student problem. It's a whole learning environmental problem. Busha is not for a classroom. It's not for learning. V'im'ein l'talmid lomar tipesh kamoni eich eshal davar lifnei chacham gadol. So now, maybe some of us are identify with this maybe a little bit too much. So I shouldn't say to myself, if we have negative self-statements, how can a stupid person like me ask a question in front of all these smart people? Right? They're all so smart. Lo das, lo tfun ali. I don't have wisdom. I don't have any knowledge. Vim ko yam ishpato, kol yamim chachma, elav mi'ayin tavo. If that's my mindset, then I'm never going to get smart. Right? They might be smarter than you. But if that shuts me down and shuts me up and doesn't allow me to have a discussion with people because I'm embarrassed, then you're never going to learn. That's lo habayishan lamed. What about lo hakapdan milamed? Ein sarach l'rav sheh ka'asan. Velo rucho katsar, ach rochav lev umeshev l'chol adam b'chol davar sheyishalu. So a teacher should not be angry and should not be impatient. Rather, should be more patient and answer whatever is asked to you. Gam ki yiskashu melahavin shuvaso yachsira aleim at shiardu l'onko shel davar. Like Rashi said, even if it's hard for them to understand, you keep going and you take that patience forward until they understand and you have a depth of understanding. Notice the Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't say anything also about the student who doesn't want to learn and doesn't care. I would say that I don't have an answer to that question. I would say that that's a different problem, and maybe anger in its full extent is never a good thing. But sometimes you have to be a little bit more strict with students, and you can't just be overly patient every single time somebody asks a question to annoy you. You have to have some level of discipline. I think that's obvious. The assumption here is that people want to learn, and they're trying, and that's when you go forward. And this gets into all discussion about who are you allowed to teach, and you know how many students should you have? Should you have good students, bad students, etc.? Something we spoke about in the beginning of Perkei Avos. Yeah. Right, so I think that's definitely the message. One message of this is that if a student is sincere and wholeheartedly wants to learn, then you have no right as a teacher to get angry at that student, and that's when you have to work on your own patience to... Now, again, there's context involved. If there's 30 other students in the class, and this student keeps asking the same question over and over and over again, you might have to deal with that, but you don't deal with that with anger. Right? In that scenario, you can never get angry at the students. You have to be able to deal with it wisely in some other fashion. Yeah.
As a teacher outside of a Torah environment, mm-hmm. in East New York or Bush River, when I would have kids, young adults, I found even when they didn't want to learn and they were using vocabulary that was far from where we should be and throwing basketballs around, I got anger didn't work either. Anger
right.
just threw them further away.
Right. Right, and that gets back to what we've spoken about in the past, that anger usually doesn't work, and we've done specific, I think, two or three shiurim on anger on its own. Anger is usually never a good venue to motivate people. Right, sternness and anger are two separate things. I mean, you can be strict, but anger is not necessarily the way to go. Okay, good. So, you know what, the source number 8, I'll just tell you about it, but we're going to skip it, is where the Rambam and Shmona Prakim and the commentary of the person who collected and then translated it is relevant here too, deals with the middle ground between Boshes and Baishanos and Boshes Panim, basically trying to find this middle ground as to when is it okay to be a little bit timid, but not too timid. So the Mishnah is obviously, according to the Rambam, talking about some level of too much. That's why he said rov haboshes. You're too shy, you're too scared to ask a question. That's a problem. But if you're somewhere in the middle, it doesn't mean you have to have no busha at all. You have to have some level of busha. You just have to find that middle ground. You can read source number 8 on your own if you want. Look at source number 9. I think the Ruach Chaim's Ruach Chaim Volozhiner adds, I think, a beautiful last point to this section here, where he says lo habayshan lamed ki im. Lo yivosh v'lo yikashel, ki yasig im yishaal. Right. So what's the problem here? Why isn't the person who is embarrassed going to learn? So until now we've said because you're not going to ask questions, you're too afraid people are going to judge you. But he says something slightly different. It's on the same lines, but I think very important for all of us. You won't fail. right? He's saying you have to fail. You can't be afraid of failure. You can't be a perfectionist and learn. You have to be willing and able to put yourself on the line and make a mistake and say something that's silly. And not on purpose necessarily, but you know, that if I'm afraid of failure, that's a problem. This is different than being, it's not the same thing as failure of judgment from others, is what Rashi and Rabbeinu Yonah seem to have been going on here. He's saying I'm afraid of my own failure. No. Lo abay shalamid, you can't be afraid of that. You have to be willing and able to fail, and it's from the failures that we learn. Im lo yikashel lo, im lo yibosh lo yikashel, ki asig im yishal, kemo shekasev lo yachpot ksil betvuna ki im bitgalot. Ratzel lomar, eino chafetz betvuna, ela im kein ro im oso megalel libo. You have to be vulnerable, umoda ala emes she'eino mevin, and you have to be able to say, I don't understand. It's a very hard thing for a lot of people to say, I don't understand. You have to be willing to say, I don't understand. As simon hu ki chafetz betvuna, that proves that you actually want the motivation to be able to learn. 1 second, and then go to the loa kapdan. Now this is beautiful, because so far nobody's actually tied these two together. We have loa baishan lamed, so somebody who's embarrassed can't be a good learner, and loa kapdan, somebody who is strict and angry can't be a good teacher. So the Rechaim Velazhner puts these two together. Velo akaptan ki im yishael pam achas v'yichas alav. So if they ask and I get angry, as lo yosef lish'ol mimenu, then they're not going to ask anymore. Ki yisbayesh, because they're going to be embarrassed. The teacher is the one who has created the environment for the student to be afraid to ask, and that's not a good thing. Right? So it's the loa baishan lamed, the embarrassed student can't learn, and you as a teacher may be responsible, if you're not careful, for shutting these students down and not giving them the voice that they need to be able to ask questions. And even in that instance, if you're angry, the person's not going to listen to you. Right? As you pointed out before. Yeah. So I won't be embarrassed. Also embarrassed, yeah. Right. So yeah, embarrassment shouldn't hold us back from learning. Okay, good. So, yeah.
Just to throw in, it's interesting, the kapdan that he's talking about is of a teacher who, in the situation of teaching and answering questions. But I think there are situations where it's important that the class sees that you are angry at some act that happened in the class. Not a question. No, because the feeling is that we learn here a teacher should never be angry. And I want to argue with that, that there are situations where it's a very important learning experience for the rest of the class to see that this behavior or these words coming out of a student's mouth are inappropriate, mm-hmm. and I am angry publicly at what had just happened. Right.
So there are things that when a student does something that is totally inappropriate, then maybe at that point the mission's not talking about that.
So now
what to do in that scenario is a matter of judgment, and it could be that showing anger, maybe not feeling the anger, but showing the anger, according to the Rambam, we've done that in the past, may be appropriate at that point in time to teach a lesson to the students. Maybe not. Maybe showing disappointment might be more appropriate. That depends on the context. It depends on the person. But you're right. That's not what this Mishnah is exactly addressing. It's specific to students asking questions and you getting impatient to asking questions when they seem to have a good heart and they're not doing anything maliciously or problematic. Now, just to be medayik, it's interesting, if you're careful in the reading, everything until now has been the student keeps asking questions over and over and over and over again. The way the Ruach Chaim just phrased it is ki im yishal pam achas v'yichas alav. So I don't know if he means that if the student asks once and you get angry, then for sure you shouldn't be a teacher, right? But no questions allowed. That's it.
Sometimes phrase that question in a very aggravating way.
Right. So yeah, again, I'm just saying it's interesting how he says that pam achas. Now, part three is pretty quick, and we're not going to spend so much time. And it's lo kol amar bel bischor machkim, which basically means if you're spending a lot of time in your business, you're not going to get very smart. Rabbeinu Yonah says, what does it mean you're not going to get smart? You're not going to get smart with things of Torah because you're not going to have time to learn Torah. You're spending all your time doing business, you're not going to learn Torah. Very simple message. Rashi has two explanations. One is like Rabbeinu Yonah, that you can't learn a lot of Torah if you're spending all your time in business. Then he says something fascinating here. Source number 11, the second line, a fourth or fifth word on the line, he says something completely different. It says, Adam harotze lehischakem, if you want to become intelligent, not with Torah necessarily, but if you want to become intelligent, worldly, tzarech shiasok b'chol inyanim shel yishuv ha'olam. You have to have a liberal education. I don't know if you would go that far. But you have to have a liberal arts education. Not liberal, sorry. Liberal arts education. Why? Because you have to learn your economics, you have to learn some other, you know, you have to take all your classes, sociology and psychology, and you have to understand everything, right? That's pretty fascinating. I don't know how often you see such a statement in early Rishonim, but Rashi seems to be, at least in the second explanation, saying that if you want to become wise, right, Rashi had the wine business, etc. Okay, interesting. Part four. Okay, and this is the last part for today. This is the Mishnah said, "B'makom she'ein anashim mishtadel lios ish." When there's nobody around, you should become that person who's around. So, what's the context? What's the meaning of this statement? So, we'll see a bunch of different ideas here. So, number 12. So, the first idea in this one is hishtadel v'ta'asoch b'sarchei tzibur. So, Rashi's saying that this is the context which we've seen as a running theme throughout the last bunch of Mishnayos, is they're talking about elements of working with a community. So if there's a community that you're in and nobody's stepping up to be on a committee and nobody's stepping up to be the president or nobody's stepping up to be whatever, so you have to do it. You have to do it. But what's the inverse of that? But if there is, then don't. Right? Then go learn. Right? So you don't necessarily have to volunteer all of your time to go work with the community. You have to strike a balance between your learning, but if there's nobody around to do something, then you have to step up and take the position. That's Rashi's understanding. Source number 13, the Rambam says, "Vinyan hishtadel." What does it mean to hishtadel? To try to be an ish. Ha'avek im nafshecha u'moshcha l'knias ha'ma'alos. This is a beautiful way of phrasing it. What does it mean hishtadel? Usually we say has to try. Try is such a boring word, right? I have to try to be a person. I have to try to be an ish. What does it mean to try to hishtadel? I have to struggle. I havek im nafshecha, fight with your nefesh, umoshcha, and draw it l'knias hamaylos, to develop yourself better. That's what trying is like. Okay, I tried. No, you didn't try. You have to hisavek and moshcha in order to become better. Ho ve'ein sham chachamim shiamducha haye atam lamed nafshecha. If there's nobody around to teach you, the Rambam understands this. Not like Rashi is talking about sarchei tzibur. Rambam's talking about personal development. If there's nobody around to help you, so don't just say, oh, what can I do? Gets back to what we said in the Sfas Emes about environment. Oh, I can't do anything. I'm in the wrong context. I'm in the wrong environment. You have to fight. You have to struggle in order to be that person of stature, in order to raise your own character. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm reading a little bit differently.
Sure.
If there are no people around, you're by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even if there aren't witnesses to what you're doing, do the right thing.
Okay, so that's the Medrash Shmuel. We'll see that soon, but good read. So somebody's going to say that in a minute. Okay, good. So we'll get there. Source number 14, Rabbeinu Yonah says something a little bit differently. So the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yonah, we call a Rishon. So when he calls the Rishonim, he's talking about people even before him. B'makom she'en anashim la'azrecha b'mitzvos. If there aren't people around to help you do mitzvos, uliasraka hishta, or to give you mussar, hishtadelios ish, you should do it yourself, viasheris atzmecha, and you should straighten yourself, shlola asos ki imatova ishar be'ene Hashem, that you, guide yourself on the right path. Similar to what the Rambam said previously, and maybe that's who he's quoting when he says the Rishonim. The point here is that you can't just say, I don't have the context, I don't have the environment, so I'm going to give up, even though we've said many, many times that environment and context is so important. It's not an excuse, like the Sfas MS said before. Perish Acher gives a different explanation. B'makom she'en anashim. Imra isa dor shatorah misrasheles al yado. You see a generation, you're in a time zone where the Torah is weakened. Amud vishtadel ba. So you should stand up and try harder. Shenemar es lasos Hashem efiru Torah secha. There's a time to stand up for God. Ma tam es lasos Hashem. Why is it time for you to stand up for God? Mishum de efiru Torah secha. Because everybody else doesn't really care so much. Demirashel esefa midrash. Kedisa b'shili mesachas brachos. Fine. Va'od. So that's source number. That's explanation number two. Explanation number two is that if you see that everybody around you is weak, then you have to stand up and try to strengthen yourself, go even further. Number three, va'od nuchal, still in source number 14, another explanation, lefarish, b'makom she'en anashim gedolim mimcha b'chachma, in a place where nobody's smarter than you, hishtadal yos ish, that's when you should try to become this ish, this man, this person, v'al timna melahachim, don't avoid to become smart, even though you're not going to find somebody who's as big as you, so he says here, what should you imagine? Right? What's the context here? The context is nobody's smarter than you. So what are you going to do if there's nobody smarter than you? Well, meaning, what is he coming to combat? What am I in danger of? If nobody's smarter than me, so I'm not going to learn, I'm going to give up. I'm going to be complacent. So he says you should imagine, visualize yourself that you're in a different generation. Right? You're in a generation where you're with all of these Rishonim and the Achronim, and you're with Moshe Rabbeinu, and you're with all these people. All of our history, Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful essay where he writes about the experience that he has teaching Torah. I wish I photocopied it, but I didn't think about it until now, but it's very relevant to this, where he poetically explains how when he, as an old man, goes in to teach Torah to his young students, he has like this gathering of commentaries who come and visit him as he speaks. So the Rambam walks into the room, and Rabbeinu Tam walks into the room, and they sit next to him, and they start arguing with each other. So it's he personalizes a whole generational experience of learning Torah, that he's imagining it, that it's happening right in front of him. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be saying, is that you should imagine yourself, is that you're with all of these gedolim, even though they're not physically with you right then and there. Imagine yourself that you're in a different generation. Gam ki tasig lamasim. Then let's say you get to that, you get to there, you're so smart, you're even better than them. Ki ima. So then go to the Nevi'im, go to Moshe Rabbeinu. And make them the people who you're striving to get to. So then you're never going to give up. You're never going to become lazy. You're always going to learn. You're always going to strive for greater. The point here that he's making is that we might think that we need a role model to inspire us to become better and to learn more. And the answer is no. You can make your own role models based on our history. Role models don't have to be right here in the present actually alive, but they can be people who we have learned from in the past. Okay, so he gives us three possibilities of what this means. Let's pile on some more, because that's always fun. Source number 15, which is on the last pages of Medrash Shmuel. So Medrash Shmuel gives us a few more explanations. I think, again, the reason why I do so many of these is because if there's something here that sort of resonates with you, just pick it out and run with it, because everybody has a little bit of a different thing that inspires them. So uvimakom she'en anashim ishtad alios ish kolomar. So as if to say, b'makom shelo timsa anashim v'chachamim shilamducha, heye atam melamedes nafshecha. So this is, we've seen already, there's nobody around to teach me, you teach yourself. That's one parish. Parish acher. B'makom she'en anashim l'lamdecha u'l'orcha la'asos ha'mitzvah heye atam me'oreres nafshecha. So not about learning, but about inspiration. If there's nobody there to inspire you, you have to learn how to inspire yourself. Perish acher b'makom shelo timsa anashim hachazek b'medrash v'lamed atal acherim. So you, if there's nobody there who is going to teach, then you should be the one who's teaching to others. V'chen darshu pasuk echad amer yafutzu mayim asecha chutzu, pasuk achar amer yehelo chalavatzcha, ha-ketzad im yesh mefazrim knas, v'im ein mefazrim yafutzu mayim asecha chutzu, so don't worry about that, drasha, v'amnam al derech ha-secho perush, so now we have a fourth. So number one is, nobody's to teach you, you learn yourself. If nobody's to inspire you, you inspire yourself. If there's nobody teaching others, you be the one who's teaching. Another explanation. I don't know what he means, I guess if you think about it, you could explain as follows. When there's no anashim shekovshim es yitzram, al telamed mehem. If there's nobody else who is conquering their yetzer hara. So meaning everybody around you is sinning. So here's your excuse. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's sinning. Nobody else, I can't look to anybody to say, that's my role model of somebody who's kovish their yetzer hara. Al telamed mehem, don't learn from them. Ela hishtadel liot ish, she'ein ish, ela kovish es yetzer. What defines a person, what gives you that title of ish, is somebody who can conquer their own yetzer. Shekasher ashrei, Ashrei ish yireas Hashem. So this is another explanation. So number one is you have nobody to teach you, you learn yourself. Nobody to inspire you, inspire yourself. No one to teach others, you teach. No one to look to who's moral, who can conquer their yetzer, you have to do it yourself. And we keep going. Vishamati, this is the, I think the last one here. Vishamati mechacham zaken sha'amar b'makam she'en anashin kolomar. She'en sham shum ish rak ata b'chedrei chadarim. You're the only one there. There's nobody watching. Ve'en roet. V'ra'en v'racha v'yodacha. Nobody's going to know what you're doing. V'lachen lo somar. Don't say echte. I'm going to send kimi ro'eni u'mi yodi'eni. Nobody's going to see. Nobody's going to know. Afilu b'makom she'ein anashim, even when there's nobody around and nobody's looking and nobody's going to know, ve'ein ish etcha bebayis sham tzarech she'tishtad lios ish tzadik yashar v'ne'aman. When nobody's looking and nobody's going to catch you, that's when you become the ish. That's when you stand up and your character is proven, because you're not doing it for societal reasons. You're not doing it for praise. You're doing it because it's the right thing to do, and that's what it means to be an ish, somebody who stands up for what the right thing is. The last part I gave you, 16, 17, 18, and 19, are just psukim. Who's the ish in Tanakh?
There's always somebody who's just like a Moshe.
Right, so who's the ish in Tanakh? Who's called ish? Moshe Rabbeinu. And you have that. We're going to do this quickly. Source 16, Va'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od. Moshe is an ish who is very humble. And then, so why is Moshe called an ish? What does ish represent? Ish doesn't just mean a person. It's not just a pronoun of this person. There's a, it's a title, right, as opposed to Adam, this is a title, there's respect to the name Ish. And so Moshe is an Ish. Why is Moshe an Ish? So it all goes back to Source 17, Shmos, where it says, Vayifen cho v'cho. Moshe looked here and there, he saw there was Vayarki ein Ish. There was no Ish who was going to protect the people who were getting hurt. So what does it mean Vayarki ain ish? So most people say, what does it mean Vayarki ain ish? It's that nobody was around, nobody was looking. So he snuck in to do, I mean, he's not going to get caught. That's how the standard explanation is. But that's probably not what it means. What does it mean Vayarko Bakov, and he says that there was no ish? It means nobody was standing up. Nobody was stepping up. So because nobody was stepping up, what did Moshe do? Vayachas mitzri v'tminachos. So I had to do it. That's this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. There's b'makom she'en anashim, when there's nobody around doing what's right, you are the one who has to step up. You have to do it. And then Source 18 just calls Moshe an ish in a different place, that when they're in when Moshe doesn't come back from Chet HaEgel, he doesn't come down from the Har, and they say Ha'ish Moshe is not here. So you could understand it this way too, is that the people are looking, who's the ish? Moshe's the ish. Well, the ish isn't here, so what are we going to do? They mess up. They don't say, I'm going to be the ish. They say, let's make Avodah Zarah. Right? So their challenge there was, okay, Moshe, the ish is in here, so now I have to become the ish. We have to stand up. We have to do what's right, but that's not what they do. They go off into the wrong path. And then finally, if you wanted to see it in a different context, in Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu uses it in the same, I think in the same understanding, where he says, Vayar ki ain ish. Similar, the exact thing that it says in Shmos with Moshe, he saw, Yeshayahu sees, I think he's talking from the perspective of God, that God's looking around and there's no ish. There's no man, there's no people stepping up, there's nobody who's doing the right thing, there's no people who are moral. There's no intercessor. That's the whole point. That's what Moshe was. Moshe was the intercessor because nobody else was doing it. I have to do it because nobody else is doing it. So this Moshe here is the paradigm of Makom She'en Anashim. You have to stand up. And I think that's a lesson for all of us. When there's nobody around doing things, we have to step up to do what's right. So we have a lot of lessons to be taken away from this Mishnah. Pick one of them, pick all of them, but at the end of the day, it should inspire us that when even, don't look at the world and say, oh, I have an excuse because this person, there's nobody here helping me, there's nobody there helping me, this environment is bad, the context is bad. Forget about context, forget about environment. It's all about you stepping up and forming the environment and creating the environment and doing what's right because it's the right thing to do, and that's what earns you the title of Ish. Yeah. Right. Low, so meaning don't assume just because you're rich that you're smart.
Right.
Don't look at external factors that means that you're smart. Okay, I hear that. Maybe you're rich because your parents left you a lot of money, right? Or something along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah, funny that you mentioned Tevye. I kind of, when we were talking about the Amharic, I saw in Israel many years ago in Hebrew. And when Tevye sits there and he talks about how impoverished he is and all, he says, you know what? There's even a bracha with that. Hamotzi lechem me'am ha'aretz.
Good way of summing up. Yeah, last 2 points, then we're going to bench. Yeah. Svas Emes is 18th century or so. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a philosophical question that was debated during that time or before that time, whether or not we're a blank slate, or whether or not we're a noble savage, or whether or not there's a whole discussion about that. We never actually fully elaborate on that. I wanted to do that at one shear. But yeah, that discussion was relevant to that time. Meaning, is it the environment that forms us, or is it is there something internal that forms us? That's yes, meaning it started before that. I assume they continue talking about it. Yeah, that was it's a good point. Yeah, last point. Right, so I mean, that's a good point, and actually it's a good framing of that the last part is related to that. Thank you for making that connection. The whole concept of a bystander effect. Why did nobody stand up? Why did Moshe, look around and nobody standing up? So what is the bystander effect? So nobody acts. Why does nobody act? So one of the reasons, there's a bunch of reasons, diffusion of responsibility, everybody assumes somebody else is going to act, but one of the reasons people don't act is because they're afraid of what's going to happen, what are the consequences, what are the repercussions. And what Moshe is teaching us is that there are certain things that doesn't matter what the repercussions are, it doesn't matter what is going to happen to you, you have to stand up and do what's right. Now, that takes wisdom as to know what that is. Not everything that we might think I have to stand up for is going to be something that you should stand up for, but there is a context where you stand up and you do what's right, and you can't be a baishan, you can't be afraid of what are going to be the consequences, what are people going to think about me, what are, etc. Okay, so thank you for that. We will now bench.